Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. My name's Doug Cunnington, and today we're going to cover a couple of things. Number one, we're going to talk about strategic acquisitions for niche sites. And this was spawned from an email that I got from a subscriber. I'm pretty sure I may have mentioned this subscriber and his note in a previous podcast. I know I definitely put it in an email. Be sure you're signed up for my email list, by the way. We'll put a link in the description. But basically, we'll talk strategic acquisition. And in this case, it's actually someone wanting to sell their site. So I'll give you a little background on that. The other couple of things that I'll mention are around me selling stuff on Craigslist, which is kind of fun. And surprisingly, I've used skills from my niche site and, you know, online work to help me out with that, including buying stuff, which I'll talk a little bit about that as well. And there was one more pretty cool thing that I was going to throw in there. I'm going to write it down so I don't forget, but I got to remember what it is. Hold on, I'm going to pause real quick here. Oh yeah, I remember what it is. I have some print-on-demand stuff that I put over on Redbubble because I think someone told me about Redbubble and then my other friend told me about it. So I was like, oh, I'll sign up there. So I have a few things that I've actually sold a handful of products. I think maybe I have like 15 things over there. But the thing is, I never heard of Redbubble until someone was like, oh yeah, their t-shirts are decent. The thing is, there's a shitload of people over on Etsy. And of course, I've chatted with a few people who do digital products on Etsy. And most recently, Emily, who does print on demand at Etsy. And I knew it was probably possible, but I never looked it up and I never thought about researching it until I talked to Emily. And of course, now I'm in her course running through it. So I'll talk about that just a little bit as well. Topic at hand. All right. So I got an email from someone after I basically said, niche sites are dead. Like, in case you missed that memo, niche sites are dead. I stopped promoting my course in the middle of like 2023. And then I sunset it completely in like the end of summer of 2024. There were a handful of people that actually still wanted access to the course, even though I told them all the reasons why they probably don't need access to the course. But I said, you get lifetime access. And who knows what that means? Is it the lifetime of the business model? Is it your lifetime? Is it my lifetime? I don't know. It's fucking kind of vague. But when it comes down to it, there are a couple little pieces that are actually useful, like from a principle and concept standpoint. So while the business model is no good, understanding how to write content or hire freelancers or a couple other pieces that were in the course, I do understand people wanted access to that. So I gave them access. So basically, I sent out an email. I said, niche sites are no good. Here's some other side hustle ideas. But someone wrote back and they were like, hey, you know what? Basically, I have a site that got hit by the helpful content update, like so many other people, but I'm still making $1,000 per month, which is pretty decent. And, you know, it's good for me. And I was like, that's great. You're literally one of the few people that I've heard with that glass half full kind of attitude. Typically, if I hear from someone who says I'm making $1,000 per month still, well, they were making like 12 or 15,000 before. Like, they dramatically lost a huge amount of their traffic and revenue, and they're pretty much devastated, because for a lot of people that's like full-time income, and now they're earning like a little bit on the side. So $1,000 a month, that's cool. But the thing is, I would not encourage anyone to start a website aiming for $1,000 per month. It would take way too much work to try to get there from here. But if you had a site that was running for like the last 10 years or 5 years or whatever, and you were making great money, and then it's dropped by 90% and you're still happy with it, that's cool. That said, I mean, that's what I told the dude. I was like, you know, that's fine. No big deal. But they replied back and they were like, well, do you think I should sell it? Do I like reinvest more time and try to grow the site or anything like that? And of course, it's so personal. I can't really give great advice. I could only tell them how I would view it. And that is, it's sort of a sinking ship and you may as well get the fuck out of there while you can and sell it if you can, if you wanted to, or you could just like slowly wait for it to die. Like, obviously no one knows the future, but the overall trend in the website niche site market is, I mean, it's just falling. There's no other way to slice it. And you could look and see other people with sites that are doing well or have been doing well in the last few years. And they're trying to diversify out of content websites. So whether it's, you know, having their own products or spending more time on social content, spending more time on YouTube or video in general, which I think hands down, like video, most people agree, video is the way to go. It's just moving in that direction. Great skill to have. And basically, it's totally up to you if you have an asset. But I was like, if you think you might want to sell it, it's certainly a reasonable thing to go out and explore the opportunities. Now, I did tell the person, we'll call them Georgie. That's my dog. She's sleeping behind me, although I probably won't say it too much because she'll be like, why are you talking to me, dude? I'm trying to take a nap here, guy. So anyway, yeah, she just got up and shook her shook her head there. All right, she's going to start bugging me here. I'm going to have to wrap it up quick. Okay, so basically, I was like, you may as well explore options if you think you might want to sell it. Multiples for websites have gone down quite a bit over the last few years. And when someone looks at the traffic and the revenue over the years, they'll see, you know, helpful content hit, you're still earning money, blah, blah, blah. So that's one option. Just see what's out there. And before I move on, the person was like, hey, well, I do have like a few ideas on how to either get traffic back or like grow revenue or traffic or whatever, basically have some improvements. So I would say if you're interested in that and you have the bandwidth and, you know, it gives you energy to work on that kind of stuff and you're excited, figure out how to test your ideas and concepts in a small way that require, you know, minimal investment. Think minimal viable product here. You could think of it as a feature or whatever it is you're working on. So develop your idea, figure out how to implement it, figure out how to test it, figure out how to like review your KPIs, your key performance indicators to understand if it's working or not, and have very clear, predetermined, you know, this is working or this is not working. So you don't emotionally like make the decision, or you do this and you don't have a specific idea on what success is. So you can go from there. For me, a lot of stuff like this, it's just like, if it's a sinking ship, like I said, get the fuck out of there. What are you doing? Like, it's not like it's going to magically turn around or anything. So volatile, and it's crazy. I would get out of there. Now, as far as selling it, if you went to a marketplace, I mean, honestly, I haven't looked in a while, but I have to imagine these assets are like kryptonite and Superman. Nobody is really into it unless they're trying to get a super good deal and very low multiples, like what we saw like 10 or 15 years ago or something like that. Again, I haven't looked, but just understanding what investors are looking for, I would be shocked if someone is like, wow, that's a really good investment at, you know, 40x multiples like we saw during the pandemic, for example. So anyway, I would probably look to your competitors. So this is where the strategic acquisition comes in. And basically what you're looking for is like one of your competitors or maybe a vendor or company that you've worked with already. And they will be able to get more value out of your company than you will. And they'll get more value out of your company than some random investor who doesn't have leverage in the industry. So here's how it might work. And I'll just make up an example, which would be real. So I'm making this up. This is purely fiction. But I have a friend, Matt Giovannisi. He does a podcast, Money Lab. He's been on the channel many times. So you've probably seen or heard him around here. And basically, he has a swim university, swimming pool oriented. And here's what could happen. So let's say there's a very big company in the market. And, you know, this is a company, you know, one of the dominant ones. I have no idea in the pool industry, but like, let's say it's a dominant company, one of the top five in the industry. So this is a company who probably has a marketing budget. They go to conferences. They have a robust marketing and sales department overall. So a company that's doing well. And let's say Matt wants to sell something. Again, fictitious, just making this up as an example, but you could really picture it because there's a real person that has Swim University. So Matt would potentially approach the top five in the industry and say, hey, I'm thinking of selling my site and my assets and blah, 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 whatever is included, right? And then what could happen is the companies that you're approaching, they have much better margin. They have better relationships. They have different relationships than other people in the industry, or especially people that are not in the industry. And, you know, the people that might find this the most attractive, the companies that would really want this, are the ones that are in like 2, 3, 4 position, right, in the overall industry. Maybe, you know, first place, they have a lead already, and maybe they're like, okay, we do acquire companies, so like this is a great thing for us and we can get even further ahead. So really, any of those top companies are going to be probably fairly interested. And because they have better margins, maybe they produce the product themselves and someone else, maybe you have to do a drop shipping situation where your margins are like, you know, 10 or 15% or something like that. And the company that actually produces it, well, their margins are like much higher. I have no idea in the physical product industry, but let's say they're like 35%. So that's a massive, massive difference. And that's why a strategic acquisition might be good. And if you're selling, you may as well go to your competitors. And this, everyone, is another reason why it's good to network within your industry. And even your fiercest competitors, they may be a partner in the future, right? You don't know what's going to happen, and you may have a great opportunity where you guys can work together. But if you were assholes in the past, then you may have some, you know, stuff you got to work out. So that's why it's always good to just like network, be cool. These competitors could be your partners in the future. Maybe you move on from your current positions or companies or whatever, and you end up working together. So it's really good to be friendly with your competitors out there, because you don't know, you could be in different positions, different roles, you can go to different companies, and maybe you start your own thing, and then there's an opportunity to work together. So that's why it's usually good to be nice. And I'll tell a side story from years ago. I'll try to make it not too big of a rant. All right, I mentally edited out about 15 F-bombs. So keep that in mind. Basically, there was someone who was a blogging peer back in, say, 2013 to 2015 or so, early years. This was the heyday of affiliate marketing and niche sites and all that stuff. Everybody was just so pumped to have a blog and like do our stuff. And there were so many great people I met. But there was one dude who basically went and bought people's courses or their WordPress theme or their plugin or whatever product, whatever digital product they had. He would buy it as a student, as a customer, and then essentially try to copy it. And he was a fucking asshole, and I hope he's doing horrible now. Not that I hold grudges and all that stuff, but it was so egregious, and it was such across the board with anyone that I talked to, it was shocking. So I hope it caught up to him, because he's completely unethical. He's kind of a dick. And I was often surprised that like sometimes he would be featured as like a success story here and there. And there's probably like about 5 or 6 people who are thinking like, I think I know who you might be talking about. So I won't mention any names, of course, but that was uncool. And I would never work with the person. There were people that asked if I thought they should work with them. And I was like, no. I kept it kind of, you know, more neutral, but I was like, no, I've seen some unethical behavior. Again, I used to work in consulting, so I can kind of tone down my tone and delivery in the details for political reasons overall. But in general, I was like, I wouldn't really work with that person. So, you know, be ethical and don't screw over your peers because, I haven't seen that guy around in a while. So hopefully he's working like a 9-to-5 job and yeah, I usually don't hold grudges, but yeah, I would not work with this dude. Okay. Moving on. That was topic one, strategic acquisitions. Pretty cool. If you're thinking, you know, you want to sell something, like maybe go to competitors and see how that works out. All right. I did write things down on my little post-it note here. So selling some stuff on Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace. So fun fact, I don't really like Facebook. Don't spend much time in there. It's kind of a chore, but I ended up in there a little recently from an HOA thing that's going on. And then technically I have a Facebook group over on Mile High Fi and I need to be more active there, but I don't like Facebook and I type slow and I'm like, fuck. So anyway, I'm selling something. I listed it on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist. It is a guitar. You might know that I've been buying more guitars over the last like 4 years or so. Pandemic time frame, and I was playing guitar a little bit more. I got a nicer guitar and I was like, this is amazing. So I've kind of looked around and I've been, you know, occasionally getting a new one, but generally I have gotten used guitars. And it's great because I go to Craigslist. Haven't gotten anything off Facebook Marketplace, but I go to Craigslist. And if you get a used guitar, it's often like a used car or automobile. It depreciates a lot, like pretty much right away for most guitars. Not all, like the ultra premium price ones, they tend to hold their value a little better. But if you get like some normal guitars, like often you're going to find it's, 30 to 50% off. Again, the nicer brands tend to hold their value more. Like many things, a premium quality does hold up often. However, you still get quite a discount most of the time. And if you look around and you kind of wait to see a decent or good deal, then you can get a very good deal. So I think by the time this episode comes out, things will have dissipated. So I could tell you, I got a Martin 00, double lot 15. This is an all mahogany, all solid body, solid wood guitar. Pretty nice. And it's one that I kind of scoped out from like years ago because this particular guitar is like one of the cheapest all solid wood guitars that you can get from Martin. And it's a very light finish, just a satin finish. And it doesn't have binding. It's a very like bare bones, cool looking guitar. And I like that. I like that sort of satin finish. So anyway, I saw a pretty good deal, I think about 3 years ago on Craigslist. And I think it was listed for about $800 or $850. Now, the thing is, I know I would see used 0015s listed on like Reverb, which is like eBay for instruments. I would see them listed for, I don't know, like maybe $1,000 to $1,500 in that range, or maybe a little bit lower, maybe $1,000 to $1,300, something like that. And brand new ones in those days were, I believe, $1,300 to $1,499 or so. I think now they are $1,599 now in 2025. There was guitar price inflation during COVID. A lot of people were stuck at home and they were like, I'm going to buy a guitar. I have time to learn it. And it actually like pushed the prices up fairly significantly. So my memory is a little bit fuzzy from back then, but essentially I knew that it was underpriced probably by like 25, 30% or so. The other thing is like if people list it on Craigslist, they're kind of down to negotiate. Very few people say price firm, blah, blah, blah. They'll probably still accept a reasonable offer, which I find to be maybe like 10 to 15% below their asking price if they've listed it at a normal price. So anyway, I'll move ahead here. I got the guitar. One thing when I, you know, send a message to the people, I'll say, hey, you know what? My budget is X. Are you a little flexible on the price? And I'll just say, hey, are you a little flexible on the price? And they'll say, yeah, I'm flexible. I've never had anyone say that they're not flexible. So I'll set up a time to meet. Often I'll meet in person. This was during the COVID timeframe. So I was like, hey, let's meet outside. And we met like at a rec center in that guy's town, which was about, you know, 30, 40 minutes from here. So he was kind of out of the Denver suburbs and the, you know, Boulder area. So I had to drive a little bit, meaning there's fewer people that are going to make that drive and check it out. So anyway, got there and played pretty well. However, it was very dirty. Like it was, for the guitar players out there, there was like gunk in between the frets. The strings were turning like green and they were completely tarnished, completely dead, but there were no issues with the, you know, any of the wood, no major scratches or cracks. And scratches I don't care about, honestly, especially with a used guitar. Like I kind of like the charm of like a guitar that's been played. So anyway, it was great. And I ended up getting it for like automatically he came down like to, I think like 700. So it was listed for $800 or $850. And he was like, yeah, you know what? Someone else offered me 700. So I'll give you that deal. And that's what he texted before we even met. I played it a little bit and I was like, hey, cool. I have cash. I'll give you 640. And I think maybe I gave him 650 or 60, probably 60, because I probably had 20s. So anyway, I got this guitar for like $660. And if I were to have purchased it new, it would have been, I think after taxes and all that kind of stuff, I think it would have probably been like $1,400 or $1,500. So again, the price has moved up from like $1,199 to like $1,500 or $1,699 like right now. So they're a little pricier if you get a brand new one. The thing is, for the people that know guitars, you know that an all solid wood acoustic guitar, it actually sounds better if it's a little bit played in and aged, because the wood sort of ages and it's becoming a guitar, you know, it's becoming the guitar that it needs to become. So, you know, a vintage guitar, an old guitar is usually going to sound way better than a brand new one. So anyway, this one was, you know, roughly, you know, 8 years old or something when I got it, something like that, maybe six. Yeah, it was a 2015. So anyway, got it. Great deal. Played it some. I like it. However, right now, in the last year, I don't think I've been playing it as much. I actually have a couple electric guitars that I just got. And I was like, you know what? I could sell it, but I put some of my favorite stickers on there. And I'm like, I don't know. But then I browse on Reverb every now and then. It's a bad habit. And I saw this kind of cool guitar. It's an Eastman. It is Eastman SB. 55 V. So this is it's like a Les Paul, a Gibson Les Paul Junior, and it's aged and it has a very, very thin antique varnish type finish. I'm not going to go into too many details, but if people are interested and you want me to geek out about this guitar, it is the one that I have my eye on. So it was on Reverb and I was like, oh man, this is a pretty decent deal on that one. And man, it really has a cool looking vibe and really looks awesome because it's like aged and it's really premium, like tuners, premium switch. Actually, there's no switch. There's the volume and tone knob and it's bare bones. It's one pickup, one bridge pickup. It is a P90 and it's just really well put together. So anyway, I've had my eye on these a little bit in the past. And then I saw that it's local. It's only up the street in a town called Loveland in a guitar shop that just moved there from Longmont. So I was like, oh man, they do have some consignment stuff every now and then, and the price is decent, and I could always negotiate, especially for something that's used on consignment. So I was like, okay, there's a path here. And I'm going to have to speed this story up. I realize I'm telling a story about guitars. It's not why y'all are here. The whole point is I listed the Martin on Craigslist. So anyway, I saw the guitar listed. I see that it's local. I happen to be up judging beer in Loveland. And I was like, holy shit, I'm going to be driving by the store anyway. I'm going to stop in. So I stopped in. I picked it up. I was like, this thing is a fucking beautiful, just fantastic guitar. So anyway, I chatted with the folks and they were like, yeah, you could put in an offer, blah, blah, blah. I could also trade in my guitar or have them sell it as consignment. But the thing is, like, if you trade in a guitar, basically you're getting 50% of what they think they could sell it for. So in my case, I would potentially break even because I got a killer fucking deal on that guitar. However, if you list it as consignment, they'll do like a split with you. So you get 70%, they get 30. Still though, I'm like, if I sell it myself, maybe I'll be able to get the, you know, full price, maybe on the higher end, because I've done a couple minor upgrades on the guitar. So here's where I tie it to marketing, folks. Finally, I got to the point. Basically, you look on Craigslist and there's just shitty, really horrible, like, item descriptions. So it's like the most basic information. They don't give you enough. They tell you there's no story behind it. There's no reason why they're selling it. There's no details about maybe any upgrades that you've done. So what I'll do is I'll put it in the description here, but basically I went through and there's a couple upgrades I did. Like I slotted the bridge. I'm not going to go into all the technical details of why things are better, but it's in the listing in case the people don't know. There's also something called a tone right, which you put it on the strings of an acoustic guitar and it vibrates it sort of like manually and artificially, like ages the guitar, like it's been played more and more. And I think it actually works. I used it on my brand new, or when I got a brand new in 2021, my Gibson LG2, and it doesn't matter if it actually works. Like, I feel good about it. So I was like, I've done this, I've done that. It's played in. The other thing I did, because I have this recording equipment, I actually like recorded a video demo. So pretty rare on Craigslist. It's done occasionally on Facebook Marketplace, but I recorded a demo and I showed like it stays in tune up and down the neck. I played open chords. I played with a pick. I did finger style. I played slide just a little bit and basically like gave them a demo of what the guitar sounds like so they could hear the resonance and just feel the warmness of this, you know, all mahogany guitar. So I didn't like oversell, but I was like, here are the flaws of the guitar. Like there's some wear here and there. But I was like, if you're like me, you will like the fact that this is a 10-year-old guitar. It's been played in. It feels comfortable. The frets are smooth and they've been, you know, polished and it just feels good. It feels really good to play. I put on brand new strings in the last couple of weeks and these are great strings. So I'm waiting. I just listed it yesterday. Hopefully I'll have good stories to tell you. And I mean, the thing is, like, I just put as much detail as possible. And after I like drafted this stuff out, I put it in the ChatGPT and I was like, how can I simplify this? I'm listing a guitar on Craigslist. What can we do? And it cleaned it up a little bit. Whenever, you know, you're writing your first draft, you're probably being a little redundant. You're probably throwing in extra words. It tightened the whole thing up. And like I said, I'll list it or send you a link to the listing so that you could actually like check it out and stuff. But basically, hopefully it works out. Hopefully in a few weeks, I'll be able to show you the Eastman SB55V. And the other cool thing is I now set up a saved search over on Reverb. And the thing is, very strong chance that I'm going to be able to negotiate well, because there's at least two of these guitars listed out there with free shipping that are, it's listed lower than whatever this local shop is. So this should be down. And the thing is, these are such high quality guitars that, you know, from model to model, I think they're all going to be very good. Now, with some other brands, I mean, you're going to have some variance in the specific, you know, just the item, like from one guitar to another, it is going to be different. But this is essentially like a custom shop level. So all of them should be like very, very high quality. The QC should be really high. So it's rare when this happens, but occasionally I'll record part of a podcast and then I'll come back later. Now, I was recording the previous part of this podcast, and then I realized, oh shoot, I have to do an interview, and I actually just chatted with Heather Ferris, which if you pay attention to the calendar, you probably will have heard that episode a few weeks ago. So I'm actually getting ahead on recording, which is not completely rare, but it's great when I get pretty far ahead. And then if I can keep a buffer up, it's pretty cool because then I can take some time off, which is what I'm about to do. Now, as I'm wrapping up, I didn't mention the Redbubble and the print on demand and all that stuff. And the thing is, I interviewed Emily a few weeks ago and she told me about the Etsy print on demand, which is the place that I should have set things up before instead of Redbubble. So I actually have the digital files and other things that I need. Some were images that I took, like with a camera, so people can get a postcard, or if they want to print a canvas thing or whatever, they could do that. I designed a couple t-shirts and stickers as well. But the thing is, no one is really over on Redbubble. So I've sold a handful of things, but really, I need to put it on Etsy. So I did check out Emily's course. It's called Gift Lab. I'm an affiliate. You should check it out. There's actually a free workshop that you could check out. That's what we'll link up to. And you'll have the opportunity, if you want to purchase the course. It's very good. It's very clear. Emily is really successful. She was back on the show on episode 550 and she made something like 500K in 2 years. And the cool part, if you go back to the interview, she really had no specific qualifications, no graphic design, nothing really in her background or education that would make you think that she would have been able to start from scratch over on Etsy and do so well in a few years. So she partnered up with some of my other friends, Julie and Cody, over at Gold City Ventures. And they, work over on Pinterest, not the print on demand side, but more on the digital product side. And basically, they work together to launch this course. So Emily goes through everything and you should check out the workshop. It kind of gives you a taste of what's going on. Of course, you could check out the interview with her. She gave plenty of details. But the thing is, I have a handful of ideas, plus the products that I already mentioned before, that could be pretty cool and could fit exactly what Emily was talking about. And hers are like print on demand gifts. So one thing that she mentioned is like not doing apparel or clothing or whatever, because sizing can be a little bit funny. And if you aim for like gifts, then, like a mug, pretty straightforward, a mug. And then you have like something like Niche Sites Are Awesome or whatever you would have on that mug, or other giftable thing could be journals, other things like that. So they go through that kind of stuff within the course. So you can check it out. I think that's it for today. One quick favor, if you dig the show, please do leave a review. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave a comment, like the video, comment on everything. Like that kind of stuff does help. I don't ask very often, but I should probably ask every single time I do a video. But if you do leave a comment and have some kind of interaction with the videos, that is helpful. You can leave a review on Apple Podcast or Spotify or whatever. That helps too. Really, Apple. Most people listen on Apple. I'm not a Spotify person. It's interesting because Spotify people think everyone listens on Spotify. But when I look at the data, most people are on Apple Podcasts. It's pretty interesting. So that's it for today. Thanks for checking everything out. If you do want to hear more about my guitar adventures, it's pretty fun. I dig this stuff. I really, I'm not that great of a guitar player, but I enjoy learning about the guitars. And now that I've gotten better at identifying good deals and like buying a guitar, getting a good deal, and then being able to enjoy it, have a nice time, and then send it off to its, you know, new owner. That's great. And my wife got on board. She was like, I like this idea of you selling a guitar to buy a new one. And that's the first time she's mentioned anything positive in me getting guitars. So I think that's great. If I could do this, I think it'll be pretty fun. So anyway, we'll catch you next time. Comment, leave a review if you got a second. If not, that is okay. We'll catch you on the next episode.